I'm Essin Zafar, and welcome to another episode of Unfair Nation, the podcast that discusses our nation's rising inequity and social, political, and economic inequality, what it means for you, and what you can do about it. Every other week, we interview one person for 25 minutes to get their perspective on structural inequality, and today, I'm joined by Gabriel Krishak, a data scientist in Washington, D.C. Hi, Gabriel.
Hi, Essin. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Or is it Gabe? Gabby. It's so odd calling somebody Gabriel. I feel like I'm talking to the heavens.
You need all three syllables. That's the important part. You know, you got to really commit to it.
We met at PopTech a couple of years ago.
Yes, we did.
In Maine. Quite a first world conference.
It feels very distant from us now, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think I made the mistake of calling you Gabe. And you corrected me. Remember. You said only people that are close friends can call me Gabe. For you, I'm Gabriel.
That tracks. Yeah,
that like, sounds like something guy, I would say. This is the guy I want on my podcast.
Well, depending on how this goes, you know, maybe you'll get the upgrade. We'll see.
Oh, thanks. So let's talk about you first. Maybe tell us a little bit about your background. You have a kind of a data scientist development background, but you also have a kind of a side gig that's becoming increasingly relevant in our times.
Yeah, no, thank you. So, you know, I work sort of my day job is in Washington, D.C., and I work primarily as a data scientist and sort of program manager for an organization that works in the international development sphere. So there's obviously a lot of those types of organizations in D.C. I've been here for about 8 years now, and I've worked with a number of organizations, and probably the longest stint was at the U.S. Peace Corps, where I worked in our Office of Innovation. And so you know, working at the sort of intersection between technology and data and public policy has always been something that I've sort of tried to straddle both worlds. And I apologize if the sound, you're going to hear a cat in the background doing various noisy things. So that's the exciting intermix we might get as well. But yeah, so I've worked in that
coronavirus
world.
This is like hashtag coronavirus.
It's the new reality, I suppose. You know, I've been really lucky to be exposed to a lot of different parts of sort of the innovation sector and working in everything from, you know, sort of web development and design to sort of more of the Internet of Things and devices space, and then as well as sort of the 3D printing and DIY scene. And so, you know, that's something that's sort of been, we can go back and trace how that's happened. But yeah, I think it's something that, you know, DC is a really interesting space to be working in that. And particularly right now, there's a lot happening around the sort of, you know, how do we innovate? How do we think about products? How do we think about, you know, we have a bunch of needs over here. How do we then create those needs out of the tools and products that we already have? So there's a lot of interesting things like that happening.
So yeah, 3D printing's gotten really popular lately. Over time, you see those 3D printers either becoming like ubiquitous, they're starting to pop up. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I know that's not your day job, but you're increasingly kind of involved in that space. In fact, you have my understanding is a small outfit as well that's you know, actually creating products in that space. So maybe for those listeners who aren't too familiar with 3D printing, what is it? How is it different, for instance, from industrial manufacturing?
Yeah, so a lot to unpack there. I mean, you know, I think I first started hearing about 3D printing when I was in graduate school. I was at the University of Michigan. So there's a lot of, you know, engineering and sort of materials sciences type folks. And there were sort of, this is in 2009, 2010, there was just a lot of interest around hacker spaces and sort of DIY labs, and the sort of maker movement was really taking off. And you would see sort of the stories about, you know, this really sort of famous MakerBot, which was one of the first sort of consumer level 3D printers that the people really started hearing about. And that, you know, it's sort of, if you think about that hype cycle that a lot of folks are familiar with, you know, it's sort of like the hype around this thing was up and up and up. So you look at stories around that time that, you know, 3D printing was going to change, you know, industries and manufacturing. And, you know, I was really interested in sort of the global South, you know, how do we think about 3D printing or manufacturing processes that can be different for places where it's just expensive to procure goods. I lived in Madagascar for a couple of years, and you know, it's an island, it's off the east coast of Africa, you know, so it's not the easiest place to get goods and products and stuff. So it made me think like, maybe this would be something that would be really useful for places where it's just harder to buy things. It's harder to receive them. You know, it's harder to have sort of an Amazon store come in and have one day shipping for every product that you'd like. So if there were a way to make that a little bit easier. So, you know, just sort of going back, I mean, that was 10 years ago. And I think we've seen, you know, maybe it crested. I think there was a lot of hype, and then there was a little bit of a lull because people were like, well, okay, these 3D printers, they're cute. But, you know, okay, you can print off some plastic things, and chess pieces and things like that. But, you know, it's not changing the world. And so I think what's happened is that you've seen it really sort of be immersed in a lot of different places. You'll see a lot of 3D printers in education. You'll see a lot of them in, you know, sort of prototyping labs for big industries and things like that. So I think it's definitely dispersed and been diffused in a lot of different sectors and a lot of different ways. But you're also seeing now this resurgence, I guess, with COVID-19 as people are, you know, printing off all sorts of things. And we can talk about the sorts of things we've been seeing. But I think it's sort of an extension of that. It's an extension, really, of this long trajectory that we've been seeing around DIY, around making, around being more thrifty, about really conserving the things that we have, as well as other things around creativity and sort of personalization of devices and personalization of things that you carry around with you or that you want to, you know, have on your wall and show off to friends and things like that. So it's sort of all these things in one. It's a big umbrella.
Yeah. I mean, that's helpful to kind of get that perspective because a lot of folks don't really know about 3D printing. What can you print with a 3D printer? I mean, are you able to print something complicated? And how much does it cost, a 3D printer? Is it expensive? Can you describe what it looks like to people who are just kind of listening in and maybe haven't seen one before?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm going to try and do this without breaking too many things here. So this is my 3D printer. So this is a very... I'll try and hold it steady here as I talk about it. But I'll just show it for a second and then I'll bring this over. But this is a typical sort of consumer level 3D printer. This is called the Simple Printer Bot that I bought about, 5 years ago now as a kit. This is an example of something that you can print with a 3D printer. So I actually did print this one with a 3D printer, which is part of a whole other project. There's an NGO actually run by a guy named John Scholl called Enable the Future, where their whole mission is basically to use printers like this one and sort of these consumer, what we'll call these consumer level printers, to basically print off things that folks can use, particularly folks who have, you know, a need for a prosthetic, like a prosthetic hand or fingers and those sorts of things.
And that's kind of what you're holding up, right? You're holding up blue prosthetic hand with
divots. Right. So this is kind of half of a version of it. So what you would end up doing is you'd end up sort of completing this with some tension rods and wiring here, so that what you could do is sort of, and this is obviously made for a hand that's much smaller than mine, but you sort of put your hand in there, or, you know, depending on your sort of your disability or deformity or anything, there's different customizations you can make to it. But you'd basically be able to sort of build a sort of grasping mechanism that uses a sort of spring tension to, you know, build this into like a grabbing.
That's really
mechanism.
Cool.
And there's all sorts of different customizations you can make depending on, you know, what the individual user wants. Now, obviously, this pales, something like this pales in comparison to, you know, a professional, like a medical grade prosthetic device. But I think, you know, for a lot of the world, they don't have access to those prosthetic devices. And you know, even if they did, you know, things change over time, kids grow, you know, and these can be pretty cool. So I was happy to work with this guy for a little while and to really support this organization. They're still going strong now more than ever. But yeah, so that's just an example of something that you can print, you know, and they've, you know, in terms of the cost of devices and things, you know, they run the gamut. I mean, this is one of the more low cost ones, and I think it was around $600 or $700, but it comes as a kit. You have to like fully assemble it yourself, which was its own.
Has it dropped down in price now, or is it still, I mean, would you get something like this for less than $600?
You can get it. Yeah. Oh yeah. Actually, you can get it for less now. You can get, you know, you can get one for $100 now. You know, they're not terribly complicated. You know, really all you're talking about is a couple of motors that basically move either the object or the print head. And it's got a little heater in there. So basically all you're doing is feeding this plastic filament. It's like thick fishing wire into this device. It heats it up and then it prints it. It sort of lays it down layer by layer. Just, you know, it's basically the same way that an inkjet printer works. But, you know, it just, the only difference is that it adds up the layers as it goes. So it does take a little bit of time to do all that. But, you know, each layer sort of dries before it prints on the next layer. So it takes a while, but, you know, printing all the pieces for this, I mean, you know, each piece probably took, like this big old piece right here probably took, you know, 3 or 4 hours or something like that. So you combine them all together and, you know, obviously the Chicago screws here and things aren't like that aren't 3D printed, but yeah, most of this is. So
that's interesting. The other thing I think that is novel about 3D printing is that the designs can be shared, right? So you can literally email somebody a design. I'm not a 3D printer, so correct me if I'm wrong, or a person who does 3D printing. You can get a design email to you. You can then kind of plug it into the machine and then it can print something out. So in that way, it's almost has the potential to be kind of game changing for low-income communities in the United States, but also around the world. I mean, what are some maybe from what you understand, kind of current applications? Because you also work in the development space, like current applications of 3D printing for, let's say, a low-income or a rural community, either in the U.S. or worldwide. That's like question one, and then question two is like, what are some maybe not current applications, but things that are in the near future that would be really cool for a community like that?
Yeah, great questions. I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to answer in one sort of go because, like I said, it's such a big umbrella because
you have to answer in one go. You have to. There's no editing that, you know, I'm a one-man operation here. There's no editing, okay? Everything has to be done in one go.
Well, just, yeah, because there might be some explicit language as I go through this, so you're really going to have to figure it out.
That's the risk that people take.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's, I first got into this sort of on that policy side, thinking how can this be a game changer for economies, you know, looking at distributed, you know, towns and villages, you know, could this be something that you just have a 3D printer in your library, in your community center, or even your home. And, you know, what does that change? What does that allow you to do? And I think, you know, while there was a lot of enthusiasm about some of the potential of this, you know, it's, you also have to remember that there are some limitations. And I think some of the, you know, it's so first you have to have a 3D printer, you know, it's hard to just, you can't just make one out of whole cloth. Although there are some efforts, you know, there's a really interesting effort to basically see how much of a 3D printer you can 3D print, if that makes sense. So they're up to like 80%. So you can basically, you know, almost self-replicate at this point. It's getting pretty close. So that's pretty exciting stuff. But, you know, really you do have to still have motors. You still have to get the raw materials of the device and you have to have electricity and it has to be consistent, right? If it turns off in the middle of a print or you have a power outage or a blackout, you know, that can ruin your entire print. Machines have gotten a little bit more, the printers themselves have gotten a little bit more sophisticated from even this little guy where, you know, if they do stop, you can restart them, but that's still a challenge, you know? And then of course, with the materials, you really need a computer to be able to do a lot of the more interesting stuff. Now, you know, there's a caveat to that as well. Like, you know, you might be able to just use a mobile phone, which is very helpful in and of its own. But you can also print from an SD card or things like that. So you don't always need a computer, but to really take full advantage of it, you do. So your question is, you know, well, what is the opportunity for low income communities? I still tend to think that it's around, what we see is, you know, really in the school districts, and, you don't need, you know, every single household to have one of these things, but you can get folks really interested. You can get kids really interested in the engineering aspects and the design aspects and the creativity aspects of it, at that level. And it's not a huge investment for a school to have to make. I think in terms of, you know, there's thinking about the actual prints and the devices and things like that, like what can you make that's useful? I mean, there's a lot of sites that have sort of objects and designs, as you were mentioning, that you can print out that can be useful, like, you know, different sort of like coat hooks or sort of things you can use around the house, things like that. So I look around and I see, you know, little gadgets everywhere of things like, you know, little designs or, you know, like a little dinosaur like this guy that I printed off at one point to test things out. But there's all sorts of other, I'm not seeing any in my immediate vicinity.
Well, right behind you, there's also the handle that you made.
Oh, yes.
through your company, right?
This is right. So, well, we can get to that in a second. But this is one of these things where it's, you know, it's a useful device that or a useful object that you can actually do something with. So I think there are those category of things where it's useful. But, you know, it pales in comparison to, you know, sometimes you just need like a hammer and a nail. You know, you need something metal, you need something sturdy, you need something that's going to be, you know, really customized for a particular application. So it's not as if, it's like the replicator in Star Trek at this point yet. You know, it's getting there. I mean, you know, all the materials that you can do, there's all, you know, it's all about plastics right now, but there's so many things that are using, they're starting to use ceramics, they're starting to use metal and wood and all sorts of other, there's literally hundreds of different types of materials that some of the printers use. So I think we're starting to find some spaces where there might be some really interesting and novel uses.
Yeah, it sounds like the way you're describing it to me is it's kind of a modern, at least in the education space, you know, which is where I have some nexus to. It's kind of a modern wood shop, right? Remember, I mean, when we were going to high school, you had like wood shop and whatever, drafting and all these kind of classes. And it's kind of a modern iteration of that, which is relatively low cost and then maybe might prepare a low income community for a career or at least get them interested in a career in tech, which is where a lot of jobs are going, mm-hmm. especially now that we're decimating kind of more traditional jobs because of the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good analogy. And I want to be clear too. I mean, you know, what we're sort of talking about is the sort of like consumer level 3D printers. But when you're talking about 3D printing, you can also be talking about like the medical industry that uses it for, you know, 3D printing of biological material and, you know, frameworks and lattices for skin grafting and things like that. So there's a lot of, you know, really next level sorts of things that use, you know, the similar principles as what we're talking about, where you have sort of layer by layer by layer that builds up, but for completely different purposes. And, you know, there could be applications of that are, you know, far reaching beyond sort of just, you know, developing a nifty piece of a plastic toy or something. You know, this could be, you know, if you have a hospital that has a 3D printer for skin grafts or something, that can be a real game changer for a rural community that doesn't have access to, you know, the sort of, you know, high end or other materials that you'd find in different types of hospitals. So, you know, it's not an area I know a ton about, but I think that's important to think about that, you know, we might see advantages, even though everyone might not need or have a 3D printer in their home for plastic materials and things like that. There might be some really interesting sort of end user applications of it. You're starting to see that too. I mean, like the I'm forgetting the name of the company, but the company that does braces, you know, like custom fit braces. You're starting to see some applications in eyeglasses and really getting form fitted eyeglasses for your pupil distance and everything like that. All sorts of, orthopedic type things as well. So there's, there's a real interesting sort of horizon level of what's around the corner on this stuff.
I mean, like, speaking of medical stuff, it's also in the news now. You know, we're living in this kind of, we're 2 weeks into the coronavirus pandemic for those that might be listening, after the world ends. But a lot of, you're seeing kind of news articles about folks or even small companies printing their own ventilators, some that are using at least part of a 3D printer to make masks because there's a lack of ventilators and masks. Is that a viable, how viable is that? To use 3D printers for that, I imagine they're not as effective as regular industrial produced equipment, but what do you think about those efforts?
Yeah, I think it's been really fascinating, frankly, to see. I mean, it's been really interesting, and there's a lot of enthusiasm, and I'm sort of feeling about it the same way that I felt initially, which is like just sort of pure excitement and just and joy at seeing some of the enthusiasm and the sort of creativity and inventiveness and just like get out there and do it sort of mentality of a lot of these projects and efforts. And I think you're seeing it across the board. I think like the first one I think I saw was a design for a mask that would basically it was sort of the outline of the mask where the plastic part or the main part, and then you'd have replaceable filters in it, something like that. And I think those, so we'll get to the medical part, the FDA part of it in a second. But I think that, from a purely just sort of, gut reaction, I think it's really great that people are recognizing that, there's an obvious supply shortage. And they're saying, look, we have the tools in front of us. I've got this 3D printer that I bought 2 years ago and I'm not doing anything with it. Is there something I can do? Is there a way I can contribute? And that's not just the individual. That's also, organizations, libraries, maker spaces, extreme sort of hobbyists that are really doing it as well that say, look, I've got all this capacity. There's got to be something I can do. And so when you dig a little deeper too, you find that not only are there these potential masks, which I think to your point have a little bit of there's a little bit of a gray zone in terms of the medical fit for them and how effective they're going to be. But there's some other things that, are less sort of sexy, but all the more maybe useful, where, the folks are developing like visor shields, right? And so you can actually get, right, a sort of curved piece of plastic as the visor shield itself, but people are just 3D printing literally that thing that it connects to, the head unit piece. Right. And so they're printing those in mass. And that's a thing where, it's not the sort of same thing as a filter that you would need. It's just, the sort of like very simple basic connector, but you do need it to be a custom developed thing. That's a perfect use case because it's small. It's, you can print it relatively quickly and you can customize it for different sizes and things like that. So, there's some things I think we're going to start to find these niches where, there's a real interesting application where it falls perfectly into, particularly as there's a time sensitivity to things, as we're just trying to, meet the demand. I think when we start getting to talking about ventilators and the shortage around that, I mean, that's a different conversation. I think that there's some really interesting and like amazing innovations that are occurring in that space right now. And there's a bunch of people working on this to try and figure out if they can, develop essentially DIY ventilators. And that would use, pieces and parts that are incorporating 3D printed parts. One of the other really great stories that are probably on folks' radar or should be, because it's really fascinating, is, in Italy, they were printing just valves, 3D printed valves. So very, right, again, a very simple plastic thing that can be, but there was a shortage of them. And so they said,
there was valves for ventilators or medical equipment needed to treat the coronavirus.
I think I'd have to go back and look. I think it was for ventilators or respirators or some part of the tooling therein. So I'm not sure exactly what part of the process it was in. I'd have to go back and look. But yeah, it was something where it was a desperate need from particular hospitals at the time. And so you're seeing, I was looking this up and seeing different like there was that story, and then there's other, you know, valve shortages. And other things where people are, I saw one story of folks trying to convert like scuba masks into respirators that could be used for COVID patients, right? And so there was some tooling, retooling that needed to be done on those things, and they were using just, you know, small basic 3D printed parts. And that gets back to what you were saying, like the value of this is you can customize things. You can have anyone just who's got a little bit of time, computer, some design know-how, can go through and say, oh, well, we just need this piece. I can imagine it, I can design it, and I can print it, and I can have it out there. And then you have other people say, oh, well, you know, it actually needs to be bigger here, or smaller there. You know, this needs to be curved, or this needs to be flat. And that's you know, it really kind of democratizes that whole process in a way, because it allows anyone to sort of weigh in. You don't have to have, you know, tons of special equipment or software or training to do some of these basic things. So that's, you know, that's a really nice piece. It just lowers that barrier to entry for a lot of folks.
Yeah. And so kind of speaking about that, as we're nearing the end of our time here, like what if you are, you know, if you are somebody who is interested in getting into 3D printing as an individual, maybe you are a school who doesn't have a lot of resources. You can't have a wood shop or drafting or some other kind of industrial class, but you still want your students to get some experience in this field, maybe, you know, as jobs are shifting there. Where would I go if I want to learn more about 3D printing? You know, what is a resource for me?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many places to start. I mean, I think, you know, you don't need to have a 3D printer to get started in 3D printing. That would be my first piece of advice. And so, you know, one thing is, I think maybe this is the way that I got started, is just to go look at 3D printed objects and designs. You know, there's probably the greatest website that has the most of these is called Thingiverse. And I don't know if we can put it in the show notes, but maybe yeah, something definitely. Like that. But okay. And so, you know, it's just like Thingiverse, all one word. And they have a ton of, they're essentially open source, you know, Creative Commons designs that anybody can just download the files, and you can just, you know, if you do have a 3D printer, you can spin them up and print them out that way, or play with them and modify them in your own way. And there's, it's a really nice collaborative website where you can sort of remix things, and then people will, you know, show photos of what they've printed. And so it's really nice. The other thing is that you can also have, there's all sorts of services out there that allow you to send them a design, and they'll print it and mail it to you. And so that's kind of a nice way. Like if you don't have a printer, but you know you want something specific, you're like, oh, I need this, you know, SD card holder or something like that, or a Nintendo Switch, you know, case or something. That's a perfect thing that you can just send off to one of these companies. The one that I've used recently that I like is called Craft Cloud, but there are like literally thousands and thousands of these. That's one I like just because they themselves work with a bunch of these small 3D printer shops. So it's not just like one big organization. They kind of outsource their work to these mom and pop shops a little bit more. So it's kind of exciting that you can, you know, you can make one order for 10 things and they'll come from 10 different places, all sort of, you know, having done their own work on it. So it's kind of nice. But yeah, it's pretty low cost as well. So, you know, it's not going to make the break the bank to print off one or two things from them. And then finally, you know, in terms of the design, I think, you know, people are a little bit scared to get involved in sort of like, oh, I don't have design skills. Like, you know, I'm interested in the engineering of it, or maybe I'm interested in the creativity, but, you know, printing in 3D or designing in 3D is really a lot to ask. There are some really cool sites and services that you can go to. So one that I really like is called Tinkercad. And so you can use that, and it like basically lets you design with very simple shapes, you know, squares and spheres and, you know, rods and cones, and puts them together, and you can add them and subtract them in various ways. And so it makes it kind really of an cool, exciting tool for folks to use to get started. And then you can sort of like it totally opens up your brain, and you can see how these pieces fit together. And then you can say, oh, well, you know, actually this hub and spoke is really just a circle with other circles that are cut out of it, you know? And so, you know, it sort of forces you to see the world in a different way, which is, you know, one of the most exciting things for me. And I mean, and that's, you know, that's how I got into it. That's how, you know, eventually I ended up sort of this side side hustle, if you will. You know, thankfully I had some downtime between some of my data science gigs, and so I was able to sort of I had an idea at one point. I said, you know, I really need something to like hold my phone when I'm going to, or my Kindle when I'm going to go to sleep at night. And so I thought, you know, it keeps like falling on my face as I'm holding it there lying. And so I thought, well, let me just put a thing on the back of it, and I'll snap it into place and I can just hold it like this. So I can easily read it. I can set it on a desk or something like that. It's kind of a dumb little idea.
Yeah. Describe tell me what it's called and describe what you're referring
to.
So
this is the and thank you for letting me do my pitch for the company here. But, so this is the proper handle, which is part of the proper things line. This is the thing, the sort of flagship product that started the whole thing.
But it's like, essentially just because this is Web 3.0. There can't be any.
You got to take out as many vowels.
That's right. Yeah. So it's P-R-O-P-R. No E.
No E. Yeah, proper. Well, the whole idea, it's called proper because it acts as a prop, as it props it up. See? So
let's see what you did there.
Yeah, it's cute. So the whole idea, so it's basically just, so this whole thing is 3D printed and it's got a little rubber suction cup on here. And when you twist it like this, it's got a little mechanism in here that allows you to pull the suction cup taut. And so I've got this version. I've got a version that uses a magnet. So if you have like a phone that has a connectivity on the back end, so like my iPad has one, you've got, you know, regular iPad, get one of these. So it's nice. You can sort of prop it up on a table. You can also hold it for reading articles and things like that. So
and did a that Kickstarter handle, on it.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, but that handle was created using mostly the 3D printer, and then you attach the magnet and the suction, the rubber suction right. for the other version
yep.
just onto
yep.
it. And that's that was
exactly.
it. So even the switch mechanism where you twist the handle, is that facilitated by the 3D printer?
Yeah. I mean, so there's like a design on the inside, this little track. And so this is one of those things, just like teaching myself how to do this design, but you know, there's like a little metal bar that holds it all together. And, so it's, yeah, but there's basically like four pieces in here that most of this is just 3D printed though. So it holds the whole, you know, device together.
It's really cool. Yeah. You were talking about Kickstarter. I interrupted you for a second. Go ahead.
No. Yeah. I was just going to say like, you know, this was the first product, but there's, you know, we did a bunch more that are, so there's this device that was pretty successful. And then there were a bunch of other things, like a little phone stand, sort of a key holder that holds your keys in your pocket without sort of scratching things. And some other things that we're developing, like little headphone holders and things like that. So we sort of just expanded this to be a little sort of custom design shop. And so now it's kind of used as, you know, with friends and colleagues and acquaintances who have, you know, get in touch with me and they say, you know, we're trying to solve this problem. You know, I'll come up with something. We'll come up with something together and then sort of design a custom design sort of, you know, 3D printed solution to an everyday life challenge. So it's kind of a small little thing. It is definitely a side project, but it's a fun side project.
Awesome. Gabriel, Gabe, Gabby. Thanks for
Gabby is good. You can call me Gabby.
We'll put the proper website in the show notes. Thanks for also sharing those resources that people who are interested in 3D printing can kind of go to. We'll also put in a few stories about how communities are using 3D printers and how small businesses and nonprofits are using 3D printers to print things like ventilators, where you can go to support those communities, you know, or get involved yourself. Like Gabriel said, you don't need to have a 3D printer to start, you know, getting into the field. Thanks a lot, Gabriel, for logging on during this time, coronavirus time. Hope you stay safe. Thanks.
Thank
also,
thank
we didn't really talk about all the work you've done for, you know, for individuals and communities overseas, but maybe for another podcast, we'll bring you in to talk about that. But thanks also for all the work you do there as well.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. Really enjoyed chatting with you.
Likewise, for our listeners, we will be having a series of coronavirus related podcasts, as we discussed at the front of the show. Tune in a couple of weeks for our next episode. And until then, stay safe. Thank you for listening. Unfair Nation's brought to you by TechChange, and we have Nick Martin here with us today in the studio. He's the founder and CEO of TechChange. Nick, tell us a little bit about TechChange.
Thank you, Essen. TechChange builds beautiful and engaging online courses on topics related to tech and social change. Check out our course catalog at techchange.org, or if you've got an idea for a course and want our help to build and deliver it, get in touch today.